Good morning and welcome to the Lodestar podcast News in Brief. This episode of the News in Brief is sponsored by Avery Aviation Software. And Avery Aviation Software powers digital transformation in air cargo, from booking to billing and everything in between, so you can streamline your operations with one smart platform. But now to round up last week's supply chain news, let's get straight into it. Towards the end of last week, there was some very good news for shippers in that US President Donald Trump's tariff plans seem to have hit a bit of a roadblock in the form of a court ruling that dubbed them illegal. But as we know with court proceedings, they take a while and are quite complex, which again has added more supply chain uncertainty because you can't wait until you know what the outcome will be to ship your goods if it's an urgent shipment or if your customer is expecting a delivery. So I'm now joined by Alex Lenin, and I'm hoping, Alex, that you will be able to shed some light on the situation.
I'm not so sure I can. Anyway, last week we had two major pieces of news that ultimately cancel each other out. The US Court of International Trade, with a panel of three judges appointed by Ronald Reagan, Barack Obama and Donald Trump, ruled that the president had essentially overreached his authority and it gave the White House 10 days to unwind the tariffs. Now, if that had held, shippers could have expected a refund plus interest, apparently. However, almost immediately, Trump appealed and was given a suspension. So, in effect, the tariffs stay for now. On Friday, the plaintiffs, which are 12 US states and a handful of smaller US importers, they will be responding. And a response from the White House is then expected on the following Monday. So if Trump loses the appeal, it will go to the Supreme Court. And just for your information, the Supreme Court has nine judges, three appointed by Bush, three appointed by Trump, two by Obama and one by Biden. It looks as if Trump's quite keen to expedite this process, and it also seems quite likely that he'll win. Interestingly, although the big, beautiful bill still has a little way to go, it includes a provision which essentially blocks federal courts from enforcing their decisions. So while this legal action has been yet another twist in the tariff tails, it may well come to nothing. If I was a shipper, I wouldn't be expecting to see tariffs gone anytime soon. And of course, even if Trump loses, under existing law, he can still apply 15% tariffs on countries with a big trade deficit for up to 150 days. So I don't think tariffs are going to go away anytime soon.
Like Alex mentioned, nothing is certain. So US importers were taking their opportunity to ship goods under the 90-day tariff reductions, especially those that held shipments in China while tariffs were 145%. So we had reports last week that carriers were quick to jump at the chance to accommodate that. I'm joined by Gavin Van Mull. Gav, can you shed some light on some trans-Pacific services that were introduced last week?
Yeah, I mean, I'll try to. There was a very interesting report, joint report actually, by yourself and our reporter in Taiwan, Alison Hu. And you reported on that the Gemini partners were launching a sort of fresh service, really, the TP9. I guess this makes it their fifth Trans-Pacific service, while Allison reported on China United Lines, which we abbreviate CU Lines, relaunching their TP1 service. A couple of things on this. Remember a few weeks ago when the tariffs were first announced and there was a sudden decline in booking volumes? And because of the lag between demand data and when the bookings are actually made, we were finding it very difficult to get a handle on how much demand had actually dropped by. And at the time, we said, well, the easiest way to sort of get a sense of it is to see what the carriers are doing, because they're at the sharp end of it in terms of the bookings. It's exactly the same now, but it's 180 degrees reverse. So we don't really have a fixed idea of how much demand is being recreated, but these capacity additions done on a very short-term basis, right? I mean, they flipped this around in a few days, gives us an indication of the demand jump for shipments going into the US West Coast. There's a secondary point to this, and this is to do with the size of ships. So, I mean, we established that they're in the sort of 4,500 TEU size vessels on this new GEM service, and the CU lines are operating sort of 2,400 to 2,800 type TEU. I mean, these are small ships, and you've got to remember that the general principle in container shipping is that bigger ships give you better economies of scale, which leads to a lower cost per TEU slot, and which means that a bigger ship is more competitive than a smaller ship. you can just offer lower prices to your customers. Now, when those economies of scale become meaningless, which is the case as they are at the moment, that generally shows you that the supply-demand equation has got way out of balance. There's way too much demand for supply. So, for example, CU lines can compete on the Trans-Pacific with the 2,500 TEU ship compared to the largest ships on the trade route for about sort of 15, 16, 17 there.
Right.
It's an indication of the sort of demand surge that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think EC had a report that the Premier Alliance were also filling in all the blank sailings that they had previously announced as well. This led to subsequent port congestion fears, especially like you mentioned at the US West Coast port, where most of the shipments are headed. Sea Intelligence said that the West Coast was being favoured either due to shippers eager to get to the US as rapidly as possible, or as a consequence of vessel availability, and carriers will take longer to inject suitable vessels into the East Coast. I also should note here that port congestion in Europe is still an issue, and Maersk told customers last week that it would omit Rotterdam as part of its TA5 service from the 29th of June. Due to current operational constraint in the terminal. But I mean, despite all this chaos going on, Sea Intelligence reliability data for April 2025 showed that schedule reliability has hit its highest mark in 17 months, although still only at 58.7%. But it's on the upward trend, which is good. And there is a pattern emerging across the trades, carriers, and alliances where the Gemini Cooperation is at the top end of the reliability score, followed by MSC, then the Premier Alliance, and then the Ocean Alliance. So in March and April 2025, the Gemini Cooperation recorded an overall average of 90.7% schedule reliability across trades. So it stayed above its 90% target on Asia to West Coast US and from East Coast US into North Europe and the Med. But it sat between 77% and 85% schedule reliability for all the other trades. Mm-hmm. We did have a conversation about this, Gav, because I think a lot of the congestion, especially in Europe, was late April and then exacerbated by national holidays in May, causing labour shortages. So we might see more of an impact on the reliability next month, especially if this US West Coast front loading comes in large and there's port congestion at Long Beach and LA across the next few weeks. But having said all of that, Gav, and giving all of this context, what's been reflected in the rates last week? Were there any sharp rises on the Trans-Pacific or any other lanes as capacity gets shifted over, maybe?
Yeah, actually, it's been a really interesting week in that respect. And we're going to return to one of my favourite pet themes, which is the disparity in data between the Drewry's World Container Index and the Shanghai Containerized Freight Index. I mean, you get your kicks where you can find them, right? But in all seriousness, there was actually some quite interesting movements. So, let's just do the Trans-Pacific first of all, because this will come as no surprise. WCI was up 70% week on week from Asia to the US West Coast and up 14% week on week from Asia to the US East Coast, right? Into the West Coast, we're now looking at just slightly below $4,000 per 40 vert and just over $5,000 per 40 vert into the East Coast. However, if you look at last week's Shanghai Containerized Freight Index, you will see quite a different weekly increases. If I might just do a quick sidestep and just to remind listeners of the difference between the two indices. So the Drewry Indice records spot rates paid in the past week. The SCFI records rates quoted in the past weeks. And we've noticed it before that there should be a correlation between what the SCFI is saying this week and what the WCI does next week, right? This doesn't always hold week on week. My understanding is that the WCI comes from a much larger data set, many more points than the SCFI, which is actually about a dozen carriers and a dozen freight forwarders in Shanghai. So this was the SCFI's quote, was that the route to the US West Coast rose 58% week on week, and the route to the US East Coast rose 46% week on week. Those are much steeper increases than shown on the WCI. However, I have some logic here to explain this, because yesterday, that's 2 days after the SCFI was published, the 1st of June general rate increases were implemented on the Trans-Pacific, right? So actually, the SCFI's quotes are likely to have included the effect of the 1st of June GRIs, which are anywhere between $1,000 per 40 vert and $3,000 per 40 vert, depending on the carrier. So what this means is that basically, I think people buying spot rate shipments on the Trans-Pacific this coming week can expect to see some pretty hefty price hikes over last week. I think it's not beyond the realms of possibility that the price increases. We've got the SCFI saying 58%. I mean, that would be extraordinary, but I think we can see some hefty 30% circa type price increases coming up this week. That's what my gut feeling, with a bit of guesstimated logic thrown in. Over to Europasia, and again, a similar picture, right? So we've got this week on the WCI, we have had a 6% increase to Northern Europe and a 3% increase to Mediterranean ports. If we continue with this idea of the correlation between the SCFI and the WCI, the SCFI recorded a 20% week-on-week increase to Northern Europe and a 30% increase to the Mediterranean. Again, June the 1st is the crucial date. June the 1st was when a number of carriers introduced new FAK rates on Europe-Asia shipments. And also, a bit later in the week, coming sort of 6th, 7th of June, there are a series of peak season surcharges being implemented. The question is whether there is actually a peak season. I mean, what's happening on the Trans-Pacific is the isolation of everything else, because it's all to do with the tariff turmoil. On Europe-Asia, or rather Asia-Europe, I've been asking my contacts for the last month now, every week, any signs of a peak season you've seen? Any signs of peak season? No, no, no. This week's slightly different. Most of my contacts say no, still space available. Obvious that carriers are trying to talk up rates. But also one of my sources did mention that the message he'd been getting from the carriers was that the big European retailers and BCOs had been piling cargo into ships and that they were telling him space was becoming an issue. Now, that conflicted with his day-to-day experience. So it looks and it feels like there's quite a bit of talking up going on, particularly amongst the carriers, trying to align those Asia-Europe prices with what they're experiencing on the Trans-Pacific.
I'd like to take this section to tell listeners a little bit more about this episode's sponsor, Avery Aviation Software. Avery Aviation Software delivers end-to-end digital solutions for the air cargo industry, helping airlines, GSSAs, forwarders, air charter brokers, OBC providers, and more to automate everything from quoting and booking to tracking and invoicing. And it's trusted by some of the biggest names in aviation. So Avery's customizable platform boosts efficiency, visibility, and control. Discover how its ERP platform can transform your business at avery.aero. Alex, what's been going on in the world of air freight? Are things staying steady or is it looking volatile?
To be honest, Charlotte, it's becoming really hard to read. Most reports and forwarders and shippers seem to think that rates are going to rise, but they're not sure when. There are some dates in the diary that might be relevant. In fact, I actually did a tariff calendar last Friday, which you can find on thelowstar.com. According to Avian, in April, there was a 53% drop in laptop and phone tonnages from China to the US, which amounts to about 100 fewer wide-body freighters. But Trump has suggested that he will introduce a 25% tariff on all foreign-made mobiles from the end of June. So it would seem likely that there might be a rush on that. However, as we know, Wall Street has labelled Trump a TACO, which stands for Trump Always Chickens Out. So this tariffs pledge, much like the recent talk of 50% tariffs on the EU, may well be TACO tariffs. Anyway, we will see. But I'm very much looking forward to chatting to air cargo players in Munich this week to see if we can work out a bit of a clearer picture. But you've been podding last week with Amazon. They must know a thing or two about what's going on.
Yeah, I spoke with Amazon Air Cargo's general manager, Tom Bradley, in an exclusive podcast last week, the recording of which is out on all major streaming platforms and on the Loadstar website. But he was telling me about how, obviously, the market is very, very chaotic right now. But he was saying that Amazon is expanding into the LATAM market to find opportunities that he described as more stable He said that the e-commerce and perishable market in particular there were quite enticing. But yeah, like you said, we'll talk to people at Munich this week and try and get a clearer picture on what is going on. Another big story from last week was the deal involving WiseTech and E2Open. Alex, I believe that the Lodestar Premium has some information on this. As it always does with these kind of huge market moves, it goes into very deep detail and analysis. So definitely worth a look if that kind of thing interests you. Alex, can you give us a look into what we saw on Premium last week and tell listeners about what kind of coverage they could expect there?
Yeah, well, Premium last week dived deep into the WiseTech deal for E2Open, which would double its Australian dollar, $1.1 billion revenues and workforce, but it would put it $3 billion in debt to finance the deal. So the question is it a wise deal for Richard White, who recently hit the headlines for all the wrong reasons, or is it a bit of a gamble? Premium also has the full story on the colourful Expeditors court employment cases, which reveal much more about the secretive company than we normally see. So we expect it will settle those cases, but there's still ongoing news there. And then there is the brilliant Australian writer, Mr. Joy, who explains why the country's logistics sector is in the doldrums, with road transport in particular something of a disaster. And that's all alongside Premium's normal revealing commentary on the large forwarders. And last week there was a look at prices per kilo for space logistics and a really good, fascinating insight into the creaking US ATC system. Definitely worth a look. I should mention that last week the Lodestar rolled out its subscription product, and we're so grateful to everyone who signed up so far. If you subscribe to Lodestar Premium, you'll also get all the Lodestar products for free. And of course, this brilliant podcast will stay free to everyone.
Thanks, Alex. I want to finish this episode by looking at the situation update in the Red Sea. Our news editor, Alex Whiteman, amazingly has been in correspondence with the Houthis. Earlier this month, the group announced it would refocus efforts to block access to Israel's port of Haifa and not attack non-Israeli vessels using the Red Sea. But CMA CGM's status as the only carrier transiting the Suez Canal had prompted suggestions of a side deal with the Houthis. I think we spoke about it in last week's News in Brief. A Houthi spokesperson actually told the Lodestar, this is a direct quote, "We are in correspondence with numerous carriers, but no assurances have been provided to any company whatsoever. From our side, maritime navigation in the Red Sea is safe, and the restrictions are strictly limited to companies and vessels affiliated with or belonging to the uprising Zionist entity in accordance with publicly announced declarations. These actions aim to apply pressure on the Israeli entity to end the aggression, open crossings to Gaza Strip, and allow the entry of humanitarian aid, food, and medicine." A very interesting report there from Alex Whiteman, and I'm sure more to come on that one. So now we have rounded up last week's supply chain news. Here's what you might see on the Lodestar this week. Hopefully, many of you are listening to this on the Monday morning, and so that means that a lot of listeners are going to be in Munich for Transport Logistics and Air Cargo Europe. Arguably the biggest and most anticipated supply chain event. It promises to be very busy, but a very exciting few days. And it goes without saying that we will have lots of stories from the show, including interviews with Hapag-Lloyd, Maersk, Lufthansa Cargo, and many others. I'll also be compiling a podcast at the end of the week, post-event, with some quotes and Q&As from a range of exhibitors. Plus, if you see anyone from the Lodestar, we're going to be armed with discount codes for a year's subscription to the Lodestar. Plus, of course, come and say hi anyway if you see us. Our news editor, Alex Whiteman, is going to be seeing a cargo drone in action in Farnborough and have a chat with an e-commerce player. So we might have some reports from that. We will also, of course, be keeping a close eye on the court case involving Trump and his tariffs to keep you updated with anything that you need to know. Thanks for listening, and thanks to this episode's sponsor, Avery Aviation Software. I look forward to hopefully meeting many of you in Munich. And if you want to learn more about Avery, they will be situated in Hall A1, Booth 317. I'll see you next week.